Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. This is a program really designed to uplift, to inspire, to transform, to remind you of the connection you have to the infinite possibilities within you. And most of all, it's a show that is here to remind you to always connect to your heart, to be filled with love, gratitude, and compassion. The greatest force we have for our own personal transformation and the transformation on the planet. So thanks for tuning in again. If you're listening for the very first time, please go and sign up on my Facebook page. You can like me over there at What Women Must Know, which is the name of the other program I do on Progressive Radio Network. So that is What Women Must Know. Or you can go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and that's Dr. Cheryl, S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L, Selman, with two L's as well. And you can subscribe to my newsletter. Either way, you will be able to access all of the archived shows that I do and a whole lot more. So hope you'll be joining my community and staying in touch with really profound, important, transforming, healing information and strategies. And that's what our conversation is going to be about today. I have a very special guest today. And he is going to be sharing, well, we're going to have a conversation about lots of things. So my guest is William Arntz, and he is the author of How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. That's his latest book. And he also has an amazing background. He started his professional career as a research laser physicist, working on Star Wars high-energy lasers. He then moved on to software, writing AutoSys, an automated job control system currently in use by most Fortune 500 companies. He sold that company, retired, and then decided to make a film, creating, producing, and directing What the Bleep Do You Know? And I'm sure many of you have seen and watched What the Bleep, an exploration of spirituality, quantum physics, neurology, and outrageous possibilities. The film and the companion book, with editions in over 20 languages, were international hits. So he is here with us today. We're going to be talking about his new book. We're going to be talking about his journey. We're going to be talking about What the Bleep. If you haven't had a chance to watch that, please do. It's readily available on the internet. And we may even get into another book that I have cherished in my little bookshelf. It's called The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. So there's lots to talk about, and I can't wait to have this conversation with Will. So I want to welcome Will to the show today.
Well, thank you, Doctor. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's so great. You know, today is definitely a synchronistic day, don't you think, Will? It's like I just want to tell my listeners that I had to correct the conference line, and when I called Will to give him the correct number, I had just pulled out this book that I love called The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and I just had a feeling it was Will's book, and it was indeed Will and his wife's book, which is it's a very special book for me. And here he is. So it's just one of those wonderful days of unexpected synchronicities, which actually is what your life is all about, Will, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is a surprise, and more so every day.
Yeah. So let's start with your new book, which is called How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. What made you write this book?
Well, what made me, this once more my wife figures into the equation here, I was walking through the living room one evening, and her back was out, and she was laying on the couch. And I said, honey, what are you doing? And she didn't even move. And I said, are you okay? And she's a little grunt. And I'm like, well, do you want to go into the kitchen, maybe have, you know, something, maybe a little Chardonnay or something, cheer you up? She kind of stirred. I said, what are you doing? She goes, I just want to lay here and suffer. And I kind of said, what? What? I kind of laughed because no one says that, and I'm like, you just want to lay here and suffer. And she sort of stirs a little bit. She goes, yes, I'm perfecting my suffering. So I start to laugh, and I know a lot of people in the self-help movement and written books and whatnot, and I'm always kind of making jokes about it. So I say, oh, someone should write a self-help book, How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. That's a joke, you know, because suffering is the one thing we all do. No one wants to do it, so obviously it's easy to do. So I figured this is the one book that delivers on its promise. So I say that, and I start laughing. She kind of rolls over, and she starts laughing, and we just start riffing on this whole thing. Oh, there should be a suffering hall of fame. Oh, there should be this. And we're kind of joking, and she's like you are. She's laughing at this because there's something kind of funny about it. And by now she's sitting up, and we're talking some more, and I'm like, hey, you want to go into the kitchen now? And she's like, yeah, sure. So we go into the kitchen, and it's one of those things where you have the crazy ideas the night before. You wake up the next day, and you go like, oh, boy, whew. Okay, well, that was funny, moving on. But a month later, I'm still thinking about this book, How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. And I have a somewhat satirical upbeat sense of humor. So I start writing the thing, and I figured I'd send some of the chapters to people I know who've written self-help books. I figured they'd get a kick out of it. And lo and behold, a year and a half later, I had kept writing, and it was done. And it's very strange to me because, you know, I have a scientific background, and I tend to think that way. And write about suffering, which is one of the most internal personal states, is something I just, you know, I kind of stay away from that stuff. And the fact that I wrote it is like, wow, this is just really odd. But I realized as I got into it that it really was, it's something suffering controls so much of what everyone does. It controls things in society. It motivates and demotivates people. I mean, the ways that it really affects everything are profound, and people generally don't talk about it. That's why when Deirdre was laying there and she says, I just want to lay here and suffer, I stopped in my tracks because no one says that. People say, hey, you want to do, oh, my back's out, or oh, woe is me, or oh, my boss fired me, or oh, this or that or this or that. But people rarely talk about the experience directly. And that's why in the book I call it The Gorilla in the Room.
How would you define suffering?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, there's lots of definitions. But what I've come to think of it as is suffering, it's the most internal of states. I mean, even if you shut your foot in a car door and in a lot of pain and suffering, in the end, the suffering is an internal state. And it's an internal state that somehow has to do with the incongruity between the spirit, the soul, and this incarnation we have with the body, the ego, and all the things we have to deal with this world. And there's somehow it's a clash between those two. Now, you won't see that definition in a book anywhere, but that's what I've really come to believe. And it's such an internal state that one thing to do, if you ask the question, who is it that's suffering? People will go, oh, me. Okay, what part of you? What can you touch that me that is suffering? Can you be with that me that's, and you know, now you're starting to go into these internal states that are often quite nebulous. So in some respect, suffering can be a roadmap to finding a deeper part of yourself.
And we're in a time, this COVID time, where everything has changed for people. We are truly entering a time of the unknown, because every structure we've known in our lives, every predictable behavior that we've known in our lives, our culture as we have known it, you know, just the ability to go out to a restaurant is like a major event these days, if you dare to do it, has changed. So as a result, people are losing their incomes, they're losing their sense of who they are as defined by their work. There's so many things that have changed that for many people it has been a traumatic time, and it has been a time of suffering. What is your advice? What is your guidance to help people through this time of change and of chaos and of the unknown?
Well, first off, I totally agree with everything you just said. And really, think about what happens when you go on a retreat. Okay, I'm going to go on a retreat, a spiritual retreat or whatever kind of retreat. A retreat is you retreat from your normal life. And the idea is you step back and you get a perspective on the life you have been living. And, if you go into self-reflection, you start figuring out, okay, what is most important to me? What are my core values? What matters most in the world? In the process of doing that, for those who have gone to retreats, it can get pretty intense, and it's not often a lot of fun. It's not like you're sitting in Lotus Land and you're in bliss every day. I mean, to really do the work, stuff comes up, things that you've been avoiding, you've been hiding from. And what's happening in the world now is the whole world got put on retreat. I mean, this is an amazing thing. It's never happened like this ever before in the history of the planet. And because of all the interconnection with the electronics and the communications, everyone knows everyone's on retreat. So this is an extremely, extremely unique time. So then the question is, what do you do with this? Because it's going to put people through it. Things are going to come up. You're going to be suffering over what you just said, your loss of your normal lifetime, your normal habits, how you define yourself. And really the first thing is, if you use it an opportunity like a retreat to say, okay, this is the life I've been living. How have I been doing? Am I really happy? A personal example is, once the quarantine hit, my stepdaughter lives down in L.A., and she had two friends visiting from New York when it hit. And I live up in Santa Barbara. My wife and I live up in Santa Barbara. So we said, well, Leela, that's her name, why don't you and your friends just, they're stuck in a little one-bedroom apartment. We have a house, so they came up here. So we had 2 months. We had a house full of people. And really, that's the most concentrated time I've spent with her and her friends, and it was great. And we kind of, every night we had like a family dinner, we sat around the table, we said, oh, what'd you do today? That sort of thing in our busy lifestyle people haven't been doing. And so things like that, and I was like, wow, this is really, I'm really enjoying these dinners that we're having. And gee, how did we forget about them? So there's one opportunity to basically bring those things that really matter to us, because you can get so lost in the world out there, materialism, stuff, cars, things, that you kind of forget what is really important to someone. And maybe the new kitchen cabinets that you're going to go working a second job to thing aren't really worth it. So that's kind of the one thing that I've noticed. And the other thing is, this gets to a deeper attitude, is everyone's got an attitude about suffering. From, on the one hand, some people say, well, it's just karma. On the other hand, some people say, well, I just have lousy luck and just bad things happen to me and there's no reason for it and blah, blah, blah. And then other people who view it as an opportunity. And I found the people who view it as an opportunity, painful though it may be, are the ones who really do best with it and actually move through the suffering quicker. So that's a long answer, but I've been thinking about this a lot.
Well, I think it's important to have this conversation, because when we are thrust into the unknown, and the whole world has been, it really confronts us, and we can operate out of fear and focus on loss and focus on scarcity. And, you know, for many people, income has been, you know, so adversely affected. Or we can call upon our inner resources and get more in touch with the power we have to create the life we want, and use this time to really go within, to affirm, to visualize, to do whatever. I mean, lots of online yoga classes were going on and meditation classes, which kind of segues this into, you know, your work and what you've done over the years and what you've invested so much of your time, energy, and money as a filmmaker to empowering people with a greater connection to the power that they have.
Yeah. Well, one thing I would just like to add when we're talking about the whole thing happening in the world right now. I mean, one of the most amazing things is the whole Black Lives Matters movement that's happening now. Now, of course, that movement's been around for decades. And the sort of things that kicked off these massive protests have been going on for decades. And, you know, we've been letting them go on. A lot of people, we've been, you know, kind of ignoring it. And there was something about the fact that we were all in retreat. We weren't so distracted by everything. So when the death of George Floyd happened, people were there with their eyes wide open looking at that, and suddenly, again, their core values, they just said, you know, this has been happening way too long. We're going to stop it now. And that's a profound movement. I mean, this is a movement that's going on around the world. And the fact that people were in retreat, were able to be quiet, to be able to reflect, and when they saw this injustice that, again, has been going on for, you know, decades, centuries, people have finally stood up and said, no way, no, this not on my watch, not in my world, this isn't going to happen. So when you say what's a silver lining of the COVID and the quarantine and everything, I think the fact that this is bringing a consciousness, and you see, you know, every day I read the news and I see that the downstream effects of that and the awareness that is just being brought to the whole situation of racism. And people are just finally saying, no, this is not, we are not going to live in a world where this goes on anymore, and we're going to do something about it. So to me, that's more than a silver lining. That's a gold lining. So I just wanted to throw that in because I think it's a great example of how the retreat, how the difficulties that we're all going through spins into something that is positive and progressive.
Well, it's definitely part of change going on. And, you know, I've had some astrologers on the show, and we know that this is a time astrologically that has been predicted for, in some cases, 500 years, that we are right here smack dab in this time of profound change. You know, it's like a new epoch, you know, is happening. We're in a new era, and we're in the midst of it. We don't really know how it's going to unfold and what this new, you know, upliftment of consciousness is going to entail, but we're in it. And this is why it's so important for all of us to go back to finding tools and resources that strengthen us from within, and allow us to have a greater expanded awareness of who we are, the power that we have to create a new world. And some of the guests I've had on before, Will, have really emphasized the importance of visualizing the future with the qualities you want that future to embody, I guess you would say. And I think this is such a time that, you know, we're really going within, and more people realize that you need to go within to find the healing you want, to find the power you want. So this certainly has opened up the avenue for people to emerge out of suffering when they realize there are tools available to change your life, to transform your life.
Yeah, the visualization, that's kind of laying, the way that I look at it is that's kind of laying out the blueprint. And then there's the other half of the equation is, you know, what are you going to do to put it into action? What is going to, you know, if this is something you want to manifest in the physical world, you know, what actions? And it can be a very small action. I mean, but if you just, you know, I knew a lot of people who get very inspired and they do their vision boards and they do all that, and then they wonder why the new car or whatever didn't show up. And it's, I mean, this was kind of part of my thing about these self-help books. Often they say, oh, it's 5 easy steps to become infinitely wealthy. And they, you know, give these sort of techniques, but it's not grounded in the reality that we live. And that's why it's so important. The visualization is like the blueprint. But then the actual, what do you do? Even a tiny little action. You want a world where, you know, racism doesn't exist. So what does one do in their own personal life to make sure that happens? You know, that's one thing I just wanted to add because, you know, in the film What the Bleep, I mean, we talked about, I mean, the opening lines of it, in the beginning was the void filled with infinite possibilities of which you are one. So, you know, the idea of these potentials out there, there are so much that are there, and, you know, you got to implement them somehow in your life to really, at least that's what I found, to really make it happen.
So I'm really curious about the journey that you've been on from this very successful scientist and researcher and designer of creating this system that's now used by these Fortune 500 companies into a filmmaker that produced and created and financed this kind of, you know, out of the box movie at the time. How long ago was that produced? When did that come out, Will?
2004.
Yeah, so that was such so ahead of its time in what it was conveying. And how did that happen? What went on for you that manifested this new direction and this new purpose in your life?
Well, there's a couple of factors. The first factor was when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in a little farm town in Pennsylvania. There wasn't much to do there. What my friends and I did for fun is we made movies. I got my dad's 8mm camera, and we would go around making movies. And in the evening, I would sit at our dining room table with a glue splicer and splice these things together, and we would take a tape recorder and try to put a soundtrack and music to it. So I always liked making movies, and that's what we did in the summers in college, would come back and make. So I really loved making movies, and for a while that's what I really wanted to do, wanted to be a filmmaker. Meanwhile, I'm going to college and physics and math, which I also really liked and was quite good at, and got the job. And then I thought, well, I guess maybe the movie making was just sort of a childhood dream, and well, I don't know if I'm going to do anything about it. Meanwhile, one of the guys that I was making, my friend that I was making the movie with, he went to film school to get a master's degree. So he calls me up and says, hey, there's all this equipment. Want to make a movie? And this is in the late 70s. So I went to Boston with him, and we put together this fairly involved movie called Beat the Deva. And then after that, it was pretty successful, won some awards and whatnot, and I was going to go make a career in Hollywood. But every time I went to L.A., I got depressed. So I thought, you know, this isn't my thing. I just forgot about it. Then I go do all the other stuff, make a lot of money selling the software companies. And at that point, I was studying at Ramtha's School of Enlightenment up in Washington, state of Washington. And I started getting the notion, well, I could make a movie about some of this stuff that's going on, and I had enough money laying around. And the original title was Sacred Modern Science, where I was just going to talk about some of the correlations between the two. And I got carried away, and one thing led to another. So on the one hand, I'd always wanted to make films. I loved making films, so that was there. The other thing was, at that point, I had been in spiritual practice with two teachers for about 15 or 20 years. And back then, in the 80s and 90s, if you told people you were meditating and doing a spiritual process, they looked at you like you were crazy, or that you were going to be like Jim Jones and drink the Kool-Aid, or there was a lot of judgment against it. And quite honestly, I sort of got a chip on my shoulder. I'm like, you know, society thinks if you're doing a spiritual path that you're wacko or crazy or deluded or something. And my experience wasn't that at all. My experience was people on the spiritual path were thoughtful. They were, you know, questioning things. They were looking deeper things. They were generally very wonderful people. And so what society was saying about us was wrong. And I thought, you know, I want to put something out there that is going to put out the spiritual information and the process that a lot of us are going through in a way that people realize what it really is and sort of gives it respectability. And if I use the language of science to do it, that's how you do it. So part of it was making the movie was like, yeah, I want the world to see, you know, what the people on the spiritual path, what it's really about. So that was the other thing. Sort of those two things basically collided, and 3 years later, What the Bleep was out.
And that has become such a iconic movie. It's, you know, as we said, it, you know, it's in, went all over the world in 20 different languages. It has had a huge impact. And if people have not had a chance to watch The Bleep, I know it's available. I think it's available on Gaia.com, one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's on Gaia, yeah. And you can also, if you're not a subscriber to Gaia, you can rent it, you know, for viewing on Amazon.
Okay. Well, everyone listening should really watch it because it was so creative and so profound in its message. It had a huge impact on everyone. It had a huge impact on me seeing that. I mean, really, you really created something, Will, that sent, you know, ripples throughout the cosmos.
Well, that was the intent. I mean, that was one of our serious intentions, was that we wanted me and the, you know, I did that with two other filmmakers, Mark Vicente and Betsy Chassie, and you know, our intent then was like, we want 100 million people around the planet to see this, because if that happens, consciousness will shift.
Yes.
And it's interesting, when in 2000, when I started it, I mean, it was still at the point, if you told people you were doing yoga, people would look at you like you were nuts. Like, oh, isn't that weird thing where you stand on your head? Now, 20 years later, every strip mall's got a yoga studio. Certainly no one is bad-mouthing yoga. NFL players are doing yoga because it makes them better. I mean, it has changed so much. And, you know, we would wanted What the Bleep to be one of the factors in that change.
Well, I'm sure it was. And no doubt divinely inspired as well. So you were just there being able to put it together and following your guidance.
Yep. It wasn't easy, let me tell you. Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm sure trial by fire, right?
I wrote 10 versions of the script for that movie. Finally, the last one was like, ah, this is it, finally. Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's inspiration, a lot of perspiration, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Wow. Yeah. So where are you now? What is your... you know, path, where is it taking you?
Well, it just recently took a very unexpected turn once more. You know, it's funny, when Deirdre and I put together the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, we were going around and doing these little, we called it the Mystic and the Physicist. We would do these sort of performance teaching type things. And we started talking about the age of surprise, how we were entering the age of surprise. And this was like 3 or 4 years ago. We were entering the age of surprise. And boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy, did we call that one, or whoever gave us that information, call that right, because this is the age of surprise, and it just keeps happening. So my recent surprise was 10 years ago I made another movie, and I made it with an African-American friend from L.A., and it's really, and it was called Ghetto Physics, and it was really looking at the world of power and the way that people manipulate power and control people, but using a very street sort of urban perspective on the whole thing. So we did the movie, and it came at the time at which it came out, people weren't really ready for it. Part of the reason was that we were putting out some of the things, the ways in which we get manipulated, the way we get controlled, the way corporations will play their games so that, you know, we keep buying their stuff. So, but people were feeling very hopeful. Barack Obama had just been elected president. People were thinking, oh, I guess racism's over. It's all good now. Well, so we did a minor release, but it just wasn't working. Well, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, I woke up one morning and suddenly it was like this, like, obsession with me. I'm like, oh my God, I could take that film and basically re-edit it, put in stock footage that's current, and it's really applicable to what's going on right now. Oh my God. So I did that, and I showed it. I started showing it around to people, and everyone's like, oh my God, this is perfect for this time. Your movie was 10 years too early. Now it's mm-hmm. perfect. So we call the movie now The Game, because that's a very urban expression, is about people manipulate you in the game. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm working on right now. And it turns out that the people who really resonate with the movie most are people under 30. I won't say millennials, because Leela hates when I say that, so she's trying to train me not to do that. So I want the 30. But there's a movement of young people. I mean, some of these protests and demonstrations we're seeing are organized by 16 and 17 year olds. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are, you know, looking for different ways to do things. So anyway, that's what I've been spending the last 2 months, ever since I got the word from on high, to go back and work on this. So that was my big surprise.
So you are kind of giving it a new life, giving that movie a new life, a new name, and a new purpose for this
yeah.
time. So is that, well, if people go to your website, I guess they'll be able to keep track of your progress with that, and when it's ready to be viewed, you'll make it known.
Yeah, we're going to basically, we really want to get this thing done by the beginning of August, so that
mm-hmm.
time to get it to distributors and, you know, get it out there, because we know the fall is going to be a very turbulent time
mm-hmm.
with the big election coming up mm-hmm. and, you know, with the protests still going on and the pandemic still happening, which things are spiking in states that opened up. So we are, you know, like you said, we are in a process now. And what the under 30 crowd has been saying about the film as it sits right now, The Game, is they're like, oh man, you got to get this out. People need to see it. So the pressure's on. The pressure is on.
So Will, tell us one of the key messages of that new movie, The Game, that will be released.
It's sort of, wake up, stand up, game up. And the wake up is like wake up to the ways in which you're being manipulated. We're being controlled. We're in a game. And every, like, corporations have a game going. And let me tell you what their game, a corporation exists basically in order to make more money. That's pretty much it. I mean,
right.
You know, in the beginning, they're often, yeah, the shareholders. In the beginning, you know, it's often to bring a useful product to people in the beginning, but eventually it becomes shareholders and it's to make more profits. So how do you make more profits? In order to do that, people have to keep buying, and they have to buy more and more and more. So basically, corporations want are putting out the dream of materialism. And they want people to be materialistic. They want people to think that your happiness is dependent upon the things around you and the stuff. And so how do they do that? Well, if you look at the scientific world, scientific materialism is the going paradigm there. And, you know, it's not quite so bad now, but 20 years ago when I was interviewing people for What the Bleep, some scientists said, I can't be in your movie because if I do, I'll lose my tenure. Or I want to get tenure, and if they see me in a movie like this, I'll lose my tenure because materialism is the dogma of science now. Well, the corporations love that because, you know, that drive people to materialism, make people think that the spiritual stuff is a bunch of wackos. Then what's left? You know, a bigger car, a bigger house. So that's a game that is subtly being played out by these corporations, and they use advertising, they use celebrities, they use all these things to get inside your head to basically make you want those things so they get more profit. That's a game. And so that's one of the big underlying notions in the film, is to basically, okay, see the game and then stand up and say, no, I'm not going to, you know, this thing that you're doing, no, that's not me. And then when you say game up, it's then change the game. And so in this example I'm giving, the way you would game up is you would spend more time meditating, for instance. Spend more time with loved ones. Spend more time away from the materialistic world to change their game and say, look, my game that I'm playing is I'm a compassionate, loving person. And so that's the game I want to play. I don't want to play your game of stuff or materialism or consumerism. I want to play my game of loving, compassionate person. You know, that may be, you know, spending more time with your family. It may be helping in social causes that you know, whatever it is. That would be a way to game up, to change your game into the one that really works for you.
It's a real challenge because it's such an addiction that has been created in our culture. We've become addicted, so we are addicted to, you know, having whatever, the new car, the new TV, the new pair of sneakers. You know, it's been a conditioning. I just so relate to the concept of the Matrix, right? That system of power and control, which is one of my favorite movies. Because it really is trying to communicate how we have all been so programmed in our culture. And we've been programmed by the forces that be that want us to, you know, buy their products so the corporations can make more money and they can have more influence in Congress. And that's how it goes, which is really the game that's been going on in our society. So it really is a wake-up time for everyone. Or those that are willing to wake up, are ready to wake up.
And it's funny you call it an addiction because that's exactly what it is. And so what happens when someone has an addiction and you take the addiction away? You know, they freak out. They blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what we're seeing. We're back to what we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens when you take the candy away from a baby? They scream and cry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those neuronets are still in our brain. Those patterns are still in our brain. So, you know, we've been taken away from our bigger TVs or going out to a restaurant or whatever it is. And on some level, you know, you go, no, I don't like this. You know, you throw a tantrum. It may be a subtle internal tantrum, but those forces are still going on. So, you know, again, we see in the world that's what's happening right now. And it's, you know, we get through it. You know, I mean, I'm an optimist, and so I really think that we get through it. Enough people are willing to take the lesson and learn from it. You know, we'll get to that better world that we want to live in.
Well, I totally agree. I think these changes that are occurring, ultimately, if people are willing to embrace the opportunity, will lead to better things. But it's requiring people to be committed to doing the inner work, to really reevaluating a lot of their values and what they put their time and energy into. It's forced upon us. It's forced upon us. It's not like we have a choice, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I kind of think the higher forces, the creative beings, the angels, whatever. The ones on the other side who are watching all this, or they're just kind of chuckling and they're going, you know, they could have done this on their own. They could have all gone into the retreats, but it, you know, these humans, they just, I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, the biggest changes of my life happened because of suffering, because of being very uncomfortable about what was going on or what I had done or what was happening or the games that were going on. And that was the thing for biggest change. So for some reason, us humans, you know, we need a, every once in a while, we need a good kick.
and that's so true. It's the times that have been the most difficult for people. And you know, I speak for myself. When it looks like the rug has just been pulled out from under you, you know, or you've had some physical problems, some health issues, whatever it is. I mean, I just remember when I was going through a period of change and divorce in my life. On the side of, you know, not yet getting out of that situation, it felt like it was the end of the world. Right? So it's like, oh my God, my world is ending. How am I going to survive? How am I going to make money? Where am I going to live? It was, everything was terrifying. And when I got to the other side of that experience, doors opened that I could not have ever imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And my life was much better as a result. It like moved me to another level of my own journey. And I think we need to be reminded of that.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So I hope all the folks listening out there, that was your reminder for the day. Whatever you're going through, here we go. Welcome to the human race. That's just the way we are.
So we need to tell people how to learn more about your books and your work. So first of all, the website for people who want to learn more about your book and how to suffer is how to suffer, which really isn't how to suffer. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title. It's really about, well, I'll let you give us the synopsis, Will.
Well, it's really about increasing your awareness about suffering. And the first part of the book, I have the 10 easy steps to suffering. Of course, the idea being do the opposite and you won't. The second part is, I call it the 6 slippery steps to end suffering, or at least change your suffering. And so these are techniques that when you are suffering, you can do. An example of them would be surrender. And I call it a slippery step because sometimes you have to use wisdom. Sometimes surrendering is the perfect thing. Sometimes it's the wrong thing to get out of your suffering. An example of that would be exactly what's going on today with the protests. I mean, you know, people are suffering because they see this injustice going on. And so, well, you know, are you going to surrender to it, say, oh, that's the way it is? no, you're going to stand up and say, no, this has to change. Whereas other times, a tree falls on your house, crushes your car. I mean, you just have to surrender to it. It happened. Time to call the insurance thing and stop moaning about it. So the other part of the book is really looking at ways and strategies and techniques to really move out of the suffering that you're doing. But the one key thing is not to ignore it, not to just plaster over your suffering with, you know, with alcohol or plaster over with, you know, whatever you do to distract it, but to become aware of it and to, you know, deal with it in a much more conscious manner.
And I think it's always important to have guidance how to move through difficult times or to be reminded of the strategies that help. So sounds like that really is the purpose of your book.
Yeah.
Giving people those strategies. So people can go to howtosuffer.me to learn more about Will's book. And then let's talk about your other website where people can learn more about the movie that's coming up, the game, and everything else that you've done, including What the Bleep, and one of my favorite books is called The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and whatever else is going on. I'm sure you have a lot going on.
Well, that's pretty much it. That's enough. There is one other reason that I wrote the book, aside from what we just said, and that's to make people laugh. You know, in some respects, my favorite thing in the world is making people laugh. I don't know why that is, but that's just the way I am. And it turns out that suffering is a lot of opportunity for laughter. I mean, a lot of the irony of life and that is that, and the satire is there. So I don't want people to think this is this heavy book and you're going to suffer by reading it.
It's designed to take you out of suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We need to be very clear about that.
Yeah. So anyway, the website is capturedlight.biz, and that's where, you know, I talk about What the Bleep there, about my different projects. The books are there. You can get links to the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises and all that good stuff. So that's really the portal to find all that stuff out.
Great. Well, lots of wonderful information for people to have and experiences. And I do hope people who haven't, you know, I'm going to watch The Bleep again because it's been about 16 years since I've seen it. I probably missed a lot or didn't understand a lot back then. So I'm certainly going to be watching What the Bleep again. And I certainly encourage everyone listening to have an experience of watching What the Bleep. It was a great and very innovative, very, very creative movie conveying some challenging concepts, right, Will? You did a really good job.
Yeah, yes. But again, like I said, there's some funny parts in that too.
Yeah. I am going to go. I'm going to go watch it tonight.
Good.
So it's so nice to meet you and to meet the producer, the creator, the director of What the Bleep, and learning more about what you're doing in your life right now, and encouraging people to pick up your latest book, How to Suffer in 10 Easy Steps. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, Will Arntz. It's just a delight, and I wish you all the best in all your projects.
Well, thank you. It's been lovely having this chat with you, and I hope those of you out there listening found something of value in it for you too.
And I'm sure everyone has, as they do every week. And I just want to thank everyone listening and joining me today on another wonderful conversation on the Love Code. And remember that every week you want to be filling it with love, peace, and harmony. And until next time, take care and make it a great day. Bye for now.